The following program is a production of the Fairfax Network, Fairfax County Public Schools.
What would you do if you witnessed a crime and didn't speak up? What would you do if you were the one falsely accused of a wrongdoing? These are the kinds of questions that motivate an imaginary character called Theodore Boone, Kid Lawyer.
This legal whiz kid, come private detective, can keep you on the edge of your seat and just might keep you out of court in the process.
Unless you want to be in court.
Well, hey, the mastermind of Theodore Boone is in the studio, so stay with us for the next edition of Meet the Author with John Grisham.
Welcome to Meet the Author. Today, our guest is author John Grisham. Yep, that John Grisham. Now, if you're my age, you know him as the author of books like The Firm or The Pelican Brief. But now he's writing to a younger audience with a whole new legal series featuring Theodore Boone, Kid Lawyer. John, thanks for being here. Welcome.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
Now, before you ever thought about being an author, you had dreams of playing Major League Baseball, right?
Pretty serious dreams, not a whole lot of talent, but a lot of ambition. I didn't get very far.
So the important question is, what position did you play?
They always stuck me in right field because that's where they put the weaker players. I couldn't play the infield and I couldn't pitch, but I loved the outfield and right field was my position.
And secondly, do you have a favorite Major League Baseball team?
St. Louis Cardinals.
Cardinals.
Grew up a Cardinals fan in the Deep South where I grew up back in the 50s and 60s. St. Louis was the nearest team. They had a huge radio network,
right,
and from Texas to Florida, and most of the Midwest, they owned the radio airwaves, and we listened to the Cardinals every night. Grew up with them.
Big doubleheader today with the Pirates, right?
Yep, they got rained out yesterday.
All right. So, are there any lessons that you can take from the baseball diamond and apply to writing or wanting to be an author?
I never thought of it like that. It was the baseball went away. Early on, just after high school, I realized I couldn't. I saw a 90 mile an hour fastball one day, and I said, "I don't want to see that again." You know, I couldn't. It was a blur, and that's when I got out of baseball. I finally got serious about studying, got serious about law school. Even as a kid, though, I didn't think about writing. This was not a childhood dream or mm-hmm. something I studied or something I wanted to do. It just kind of happened later in life.
Well, one of the best parts of this show is that we get questions via email or phone calls. So let's go to our first email question. This one comes from Cowpens, South Carolina. Why did you decide to write teen books when your previous novels were geared towards the adults?
It's a very good question and simple answer. My daughter's a school teacher in Raleigh, North Carolina, and about 5 years ago, over dinner, she said she asked me if I could write suspense for kids. And we grew up with a lot of books in the house, and she's a big reader, and she's really pushing reading on her students. And she said she's found a lot of books for kids, a lot of fantasy, mm-hmm. a lot of you know, historical fiction, all kinds of books, but not any real good suspense. And I thought, that's an interesting challenge, because I've written so many suspenseful novels for adults. And I started thinking about it, and I created this character. 13-year-old kid, Theodore Boone. His both parents are lawyers. He's grown up in a family filled with lawyers, a law office. That's all they talk about is the law. He knows a lot of law, and it gets him in a lot of trouble, and he has to get out of trouble. And so it just took off. And so it's been a delightful pursuit of this kid. And the more I write about Theo, the more stories I can find to write about Theo.
When you approach stories for a younger audience, what's the main difference in your approach versus your adult books?
Yeah, you have to switch gears. The books are easier to write in one regard because they are shorter. The plots are not as intricate. The character is not as complicated. The writing style is simpler because you're writing for, you know, ages 10 through 15. At the same time, it's hard to get that voice. Sometimes, when I was 13 years old, it was a great year for me. I was in the eighth grade. It was the eighth grade, about to go to high school. I played sports. I was active. I loved scouting. And I loved my teachers. And it was just one of those magical years as a kid. at the age of 13. And so I keep trying to remember that voice and how much fun it was being 13 years old. Right. And I have to get back into that mindset every time I go back to Theo.
Well, you do a great job of it. John's Theodore Boone series is about unraveling mysteries just as much as it is about the connection between social issues and the law. Our student reporter would like to pose this question to our audience. Are you there, Nam?
Yes, Matt. I'm here at Robinson High School. Hey, pretty cool that John Grisham is in the studio. Hey, Mr. Grisham, thanks for coming. We'd like to pose this question to you and the audience, even though Theodore Boone already knows the answer. True or false, juveniles have a right to a trial jury. Stay with us. That question and many more will be answered soon.
All right, thanks, Nam. We'll get to that answer a little later in the program. But John, let's go back to the town that Theo bombs around on his bike in, Strattonburg. How did you come up with Strattonburg and the courthouse that he spends so much time in?
Well, it's always difficult coming up with unique or original names. Just start Googling. Think of a name of a town you want to create and start Googling it. Mm-hmm. And there's one somewhere, or right, three or four or right. five. And I worked repeatedly trying to find a name that was truly unique. I couldn't find anywhere in America or Canada that's easy to remember, easy to pronounce, easy to remember.
Right.
And it was a long process. And I finally found Strattonburg. And the state will never be revealed. I won't tell you where it is. I'm not sure where it is. There are a few clues along the way, but it's, you know, somewhere within a few hours of here, D.C.
Right.
Because of, you know, things they do, the little clues I leave on. But really, the names are always difficult. In several of my adult novels and legal thrillers, I've actually run into trouble before setting an entire book in a fictional town and doing the research to make sure it's fictional. And then when I get checked in New York, they right. find a real town. So you got to change everything. You got to change the town again.
Right,
so,
right.
so far, we have found no real Strattonburg anywhere in the world.
And as far as when you describe the town and the different buildings in there and the courthouse, does that just all come from experiences in your life?
Yeah, that's all fiction. I love college towns. I've always lived in college towns for the past 30 years. There's a small college there. The town is 75,000 people, which is big enough to have a lot of things and small enough to still be a small town.
Right.
It has a river and a park and a downtown, and a grand courthouse that Theo just loves. And he knows all the nooks and crannies and hidden staircases in the courthouse. He knows, you know, he's always sneaking around doing something he shouldn't be doing. But that's all fiction. That's being able to sit back and just create stories about this kid.
Well, you do a great job explaining it, because as you're reading it, you can really picture everything and can picture where he's going. It's great. Let's hear from our student audience. But before we do, jot down our phone number and join the conversation. But first, a few questions from students from Twain Middle School for our special guest, John Grisham.
Which of Theo's traits do you possess or wish he possessed?
How do you think the book would have changed if Theo didn't have such a close connection with Judge Gantry?
Hi, Mr. Grisham. I was wondering if there's a specific trial or event that inspired you to write this book.
All right, so let's tackle those questions. Let's start with, do you share any personal traits with Theo?
Sure. I was raised in a pretty strict home, like Theo, where I was expected to behave, do my chores, be on time, clean up after myself, be responsible. And I was also very active in scouting. I love that, as Theo does. And you learn those lessons in scouting.
Mm-hmm.
Honesty, bluntness, veracity, those are all traits that I was taught as a little kid. You know, my father used to say, I don't care what you've done, just be honest about it. Don't lie to me. Tell me and we'll deal with it. But don't lie to me.
Right.
And I remember that as a little boy. And I would tell the truth. I'd get in trouble, but we'd get over it, okay? And I just learned that lesson. I taught my kids that. Don't lie to me. Tell me the truth and we'll deal with it. I still love you. And we're going to get through this. That's the way I was raised. And I was also taught to speak my mind. You know, we were, and to think in different ways, to read a lot, to be creative. And I think Theo has all of those attributes.
Okay, let's tackle the second question. The connection between Theo and Judge Gantry. Tell us a little bit more about their relationship.
Well, Judge Gantry is Theo's favorite judge. He knows all the judges. They all know Theo because he hangs around the courthouse. For fun, Theo goes to trials, so everybody knows him. All the police know him. All the lawyers know him. Gantry's his favorite because Gantry is sort of the senior judge in the biggest courtroom who has the most prestige and is the wisest and the most experienced. And so Theo just thinks he's awesome. Theo's always battling, do I want to be a great lawyer or a great judge like Judge Gantry? Yeah. And they have a special friendship.
And thirdly, the specific trials or the situations that Theo runs into, where do those come from?
Well, I was a lawyer for 10 years, and I spent a lot of time in the courtroom. I wanted to be a courtroom lawyer, and I did a lot of trials. So the legal stuff really just comes natural. And I also, as I'm writing, I don't have to go research much, a little bit, but not much, because I know it. Because a lot of these cases, I did a lot of juvenile court work when I was a kid. I'm a lawyer. A lot of it was volunteer work, because I had a special soft spot for kids who are in trouble, and I'd volunteer to represent them in court. Well, you hear a lot of stories, and lawyers who hang around courtrooms and police departments and clients, you hear a lot of stories, and I've used those stories in my adult fiction. Still use them all the time. Still, they're filed away. But a lot of stories for Theo's future.
Well, I think that answers a previous question too, because Theo helps out his students, his friends a lot too, helps them with any issue they may have.
He does, and he shouldn't. He cannot practice law, but he doesn't know that. But he's always careful. The kids come to him quietly, but if there's a problem at home, one friend had a brother in jail, one friend had parents were about to be, the house was going to be foreclosed. Right. Well, trying to explain a foreclosure and a mortgage to kids is challenging, but we got through it. Theo and I got through it because he was able to do it. But he's always careful to say, look, I'm not a lawyer. You need to talk to my mom or my dad, or I'll show you, I'll tell you a lawyer to go talk to. Like in the first book, the family was facing bankruptcy. Well, Theo knew that the best bankruptcy lawyer was down the street.
Right.
And he gave the kid the lawyer's name and phone number and said, this is the guy you got to go to. So he's always helping out. He gets in trouble when he goes a little bit too far, right, and wants to be a real lawyer. Except in animal court, where in animal court, anybody can walk in and try your own case.
Right.
And there are courts like that, not animal court. I've never seen animal court. But small claims courts in a lot of jurisdictions, you don't have to have a lawyer. You can walk in, the judge is there with a black robe on, you got your opponent, you argue your case, and the judge makes a decision. But for bigger stuff, you got to have a lawyer.
All right, we've had a couple emails. We got a phone call now. Let's take our first phone call. Go ahead, whoever's on the line.
Hi, hello. My name is Lonnie Smith. Hello, Mr. Grisham. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great. I currently attend Bryant Alternative High School, and I will graduate in June at the end of this year. I did a research paper last year, and I became very passionate about the reality of human trafficking. And I was wondering if you would ever write a book about that topic. And the P.S., the beginning pages of A Time to Kill are crazy. It just automatically hooked me right away. I love it.
Well, thank you. For saying that about Time to Kill, it's still very difficult for me to read that. It's something I wrote 30 years ago, and I probably couldn't write it now. What was the first part of the question? I got a short memory.
Human trafficking.
Oh, yeah.
Write anything about human trafficking.
Actually, I have a book coming out next month called Rogue Lawyer. It's my next legal thriller for adults, and there is a subplot in that story about human trafficking. It's a fascinating subject to explore. However, it's so awful. It's so undesirable, you can't write too much about it. People don't believe how much trafficking is going on. And I've thought about many times taking that issue and wrapping a novel around it, which is what I do with the better books I write. But I've always backed away because it's such an unpleasant topic. And so I'm still thinking about it, but great question.
Well, we mentioned how Theo spends a lot of time in the courthouse. Well, have you ever been to court? For many middle school students, the answer is yes, because of field trips. And we're not talking about an increase in juvenile delinquency, but the opportunity, as I said, that they get to see firsthand what happens in a court of law behind the bar. Let's take a look.
I'm here outside the historic Fairfax County Courthouse. Built in 1800, this is a good place to explain the roles people play as officers of the court. There are a lot of players, so with a little help from my MTA friends, we'll show you who's who and what's what. Let's go inside.
I just want to tell you, this is how I imagine a small town courtroom. There are two floors with a special room for the jury upstairs and no technology. My favorite part is this railing. The expression, passing the bar, comes from a railing just like this. Its purpose was to physically separate the public from the officers of the court, like that guy over there.
This is where the bailiff stands. The bailiff calls the court to order.
All rise, the court is now in session. The Honorable Judge Noonan is presiding.
The bench is where the judge sits, and even though it's called a bench, it's more of a big chair and large desk combo that faces the entire courtroom. After the judge is seated, everyone is allowed to sit down. The judge announces the beginning of the trial and directs the clerk to bring in the jury. That is, if there is a jury. Not all cases require a jury's decision.
The clerk of court performs a variety of duties. This person is seated near the judge and is responsible for swearing in the jury and filing papers, sort of like an on-site office manager.
Also seated near the judge is the court reporter, also known as the stenographer. This is the person who records everything that is said word for word in the legal proceeding. This becomes the transcript.
During a criminal trial, the prosecuting attorney sits here, but stands to deliver an opening statement to the jury. This statement outlines the facts of the case and anticipated proof. This happens at the start of the trial before any evidence has been presented.
This desk is where you'll find the defense attorney. This individual appears on behalf of the defendant, who is the person accused of the crime. The defense attorney also stands to deliver an opening statement which outlines reasons the defendant is not guilty.
And in these benches, this is where the jury sits. The jury is a group of people selected to hear the evidence in the trial and issue a verdict based on the facts.
After the opening statements, the prosecuting attorney begins to call witnesses to the stand. Traditionally, witnesses were required to actually stand. But nowadays, they just sit in a designated area, which is located right next to the judge's bench. The clerk swears them in.
When the prosecutor finishes questioning the witness, the defense attorney may then cross-examine the witness to test the credibility of his or her statements.
The defense attorney then follows the same pattern, calling witnesses, listening to the cross-examination, and asking questions.
After all the evidence has been presented, both the defense and prosecuting attorneys deliver their closing arguments. The clerk announces,
"The court will now charge the jury,"
and the judge instructs the jury on the law they must apply in the case. The jurors then go to the jury room to deliberate.
The jury chooses a leader. They discuss the trial and try to reach a verdict. According to Virginia state law, a jury ruling must be unanimous. When a verdict is reached, the jury presents it to the clerk, who then hands it to the judge. The judge silently reads the verdict and hands it back to the clerk to read aloud.
The court is now adjourned.
The players of a court of law ensure that justice and due process is fair and square. No one should have an advantage. This is one of the many lessons learned here at the historic Fairfax County Courthouse. Now back to the studio and our special guest, John Grisham.
Before we go to another phone call, they were in a historic courthouse. Mm-hmm. How does that compare to a modern day courthouse?
Courtrooms are fascinating. No two are the same. I love the old ones. That's my home courtroom when I was a young lawyer was a historic courtroom. Now with technology though, they're very, very different, and some have, you know, modern furniture and the computer screens everywhere. It's different now. I like the old days better.
Yeah. Okay, we have another phone caller. Go ahead. What's your question for John Grisham?
Hi, my name is Michaela Moore, and I attend the Tatma School in Delaware. I was wondering what authors inspired you the most.
When you started writing, were there any authors that really got your juices flowing?
You know, as a kid, as a real small kid, I remember vividly reading Dr. Seuss. My mother made us read or taught us to read it young. When I was probably 10 or 11 years old, I discovered the Chip Hilton sports book series by Claire B. It's about 20 books, all about sports, and I love sports. When I was 12 or 13, I read Tom Sawyer and fell in love with Mark Twain, Huckleberry Finn, and I still read a lot of Mark Twain. No one really inspired me to write. I was inspired by something that I saw in a courtroom.
Right.
And I do have heroes, certain writers that I thoroughly enjoy. It's kind of tricky, though, when you have a favorite writer. When I'm actually writing, I try not to read great books because you catch yourself sort of instinctively doing things or copying that you things you wouldn't normally do. You try to, it's almost self unconsciously imitate the style of a great writer. And so I have to stay away from a lot of books when I'm actually writing. I love mysteries, crime fiction, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Okay, we've got another email. This one from Oak Ridge Middle School, Naples, Florida. They want to know, what kind of process do you use to create your characters?
Well, with Theo, the characters are pretty much in place, book after book. Obviously, you've got the main characters. You have to add the new characters to fill out the plot. It's just a process of thinking, okay, I'm writing the Theo number six, as I call it right now, because I don't have a title to go with Theodore Boone. And I'm working on it every day now. I'm probably 20% done with it. So it's an ongoing process every day. I just drove here to the studio from 2 hours away, and the whole time I'm thinking about, okay, when I work tomorrow, I'm at this point in the plot. What's this character going to do? So it's just something I'm always thinking about when I'm writing. It's just a, you know, I have a hyperactive imagination. Right. I was blessed with that when I didn't realize I was 30 years old. And once I get a story going and get the characters going, I pretty much get consumed with that idea.
Right. I think we have another phone call. Go ahead. What's your question for John Grisham? Hello? Sarah, are you there? What's your question for John Grisham?
I already told the teacher.
Say that again, Sarah.
Oh, I'm sorry. We would love to know what Mr. Grisham's favorite novel is.
Do you have a favorite?
Favorite of my books or favorite of all books?
Give us both.
Okay. Well, I can't rate my, I don't go back and read my books.
Right.
when I'm done with them, I'm done with them. I've never been able to go back and read a Theo book.
Is there any you've enjoyed the process more than another?
No, I mean, they're all pretty much the same as far as, some of the research is fascinating because I go to a lot of prisons. I've been to death row in a number of states. I've traveled abroad a lot to research. That's all fun.
Right.
But the process is, you know, at times interesting, but it's all basically the same. My favorite book of all time, when I was 17, I had a real good high school English teacher, and she made us read good books. And when I read The Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck, I thought that was pretty great. Mm-hmm. And I've read it, you know, many times since then, and it's probably still my favorite book.
Yeah, very good. Well, the character of Theodore Boone might be a literary cousin of the Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, and Alex Rider, all characters found in mysteries. Now let's find out the common elements of a good whodunit.
Students learn the ingredients of many things. In chemistry, I think of atoms. In music, notes of duration and pitch of sound. I asked some students to share their ingredients for a good mystery. And here's what they said.
A mystery includes the scene of the crime, like Mr. Duffy's house on the golf course.
A mystery includes suspects.
In a mystery, there are red herrings, and those are fake clues.
In a mystery, secrets are revealed.
In a mystery, you find clues in the strangest places.
A mystery includes people who can't be trusted.
In a mystery plotline, something's always stolen.
A mystery includes an investigator like Theodore Boone.
What's in a mystery? All the ingredients in a good book. Now, let's return to the studio.
But before we take another phone call, so what do you think a good mystery should include?
Well, you got to have some fake clues. I mean, I read them all the time, and my wife reads a lot of them, and she claims she can have it figured out by, you know, by the time she gets halfway through with the book. I don't believe that. And we have these discussions about, because I'll stop her sometimes. Okay, how's it going to end? Well, that's, yeah, it makes her mad. You got to have some good fake clues that are believable. A lot of times you'll read a mystery and the red herring is obvious. It's too obvious. So you know it's not going to go that way, and you know the writer's going to try to throw you off a few times. So you know you're always trying to think one step ahead of the writer. And I love the book where you just get everything wrong, and there's a great conclusion, and you say, I didn't see that coming, you know. And that's what I enjoy.
And as an author, is that one of your goals, to try to have it end in a way that nobody saw coming?
Well, I get irritated when reviewers say something like, well, this book is a formula, and when I knew by page 10 what was going to happen. That's not true, because I don't know what's going to happen all the time. I don't write a lot of mysteries. I write a lot of suspense. My books are not classic whodunits, you know, who's the suspect and where are the false clues and what's going to happen. I do love and I work hard at coming up with the unpredictable ending that just blows the reader away. Mm-hmm. You know, when I write adult fiction, and Theo too, I want the reader hooked in, certainly by the first chapter, often by the first page or two. You know, something's going to get you quick. And then it leads up to a conclusion that you don't see coming, okay? The hard part is maintaining the tension mm-hmm. for 400 pages. You know, that's where you really earn your money, and you really have to plan the story. And I tell students this all the time, I don't care what you're writing, what kind of, if it's a paper, research, or a short story, whatever, you know, you've got to stop before you start and think, okay, what's the beginning, what's the end, and what's the middle? You got to think through the whole story. I know a lot of writers who just start writing because they feel creatively, you know, ready to go. Well, a lot of them are fired up for about 50 pages, and they get lost. They get lost in the story.
Right.
That's too much work to waste that much time. So I really stress to students, do the outlining, which is not any fun because you want to get busy with the story. And that's crucial. I taught my kids this, or told my kids, they never listened to me. The second most important part is to revise and edit when you get finished. Never turn in a first draft. Never turn in a second draft. Go through it several times. And I have to do that. I have to go through the manuscripts, 500-page manuscripts, mm-hmm. you know, five or six times right. after I'm finished. So it's just part of the process.
I think we've got time for one more phone call. Go ahead, caller. Savannah, you're on the line. Go ahead for Mr. Grisham.
I was wondering how long it took you to write a novel.
You know what? Great question. It takes me about 6 months, usually from January the 1st to July the 1st, to write an adult novel. And that's going to be, you know, 400 or 500 pages long, sometimes 600. And for Theo books, as I call them, I usually start around the 1st of September with the goal of finishing by Christmas. So 3 or 4 months.
3 or 4 months, that's a good time frame. Mm-hmm. We got just enough time to answer the question we posed to you earlier in the show. Nam, go ahead and give us the question and the answer.
True or false? Juveniles have a right to a trial jury. The answer is false. Judges decide cases involving children. However, there are times when a teenager can be considered an adult under the law. That means a jury can be called. In these cases, the alleged crime is very serious, and so is the punishment.
Obviously, Theo Boone would have known the answer to that question.
Oh, sure. Theo knows everything.
Just a little bit of time left before we go. Any advice to our wannabe authors out there, very quickly?
I have yet to meet a writer who was not a big reader. You've got to read. And reading, because it makes you a better writer, it also makes you a lot smarter.
Right.
The more you read, the smarter you are. And so read all types of books, but just read.
Great advice. Thanks for being here today.
My pleasure. A lot of fun.
Great to have you. I'm Matt Fetters for the Fairfax Network. Remember, keep reading, keep writing, and keep dreaming.